Welcome to Audio Gyan with Kedar Nimkar, a podcast that documents insightful conversations with Indian designers, artists, musicians, writers, thinkers, and creatives of all types. Catch us on iTunes or visit audiogyan.com for more Gyan sessions. Here's your host, Kedar Nimkar.
Martin Scorsese once said, "Cinema is a matter of what's in the frame and what's out." I guess Mubi also has a similar viewpoint. They're particular of which movie is on the platform and which is out. Today, I have Svetlana Nodial with us on Audio Gyan. She's a director of content at Mubi India. Svetlana has a rich background of cinema, content, and curation. She has previously worked with in different capacities with NFDC, Mami, Drishyan Films, to name a few. We'll try and understand how curation happens at Mubi and few aspects about curation in cinema. So, curation of cinema, rather. So, thanks, Svetlana, for giving your time, and it's a real, real pleasure to have you on Audio Gyan.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure, actually, to be here, to be talking to you. I really love the work that you guys are doing at Audio Gyan. Yeah. And love listening to it as well. So happy to be here.
Thanks. In fact, I want to thank you and Mubi for giving Audio Gyan listeners a full month of free of such amazing films through Mubi.com/Audio Gyan. And yeah, it's a matter of great pride for me to be associated with Mubi. And yeah, thanks for that.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I hope everyone enjoys the movies.
Yeah. So I'll start with a more meta question, which is what does curation mean to you in a more cinema context?
To be super honest, I sort of avoid using the word curator for myself. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes it has a perceived importance attached to it. And if I have to tell somebody, what do you do? And I just say, I program films, which basically means that somebody made something amazing and I just put it in a certain order. Mm. In context of Mubi and cinema, or generally what I personally feel about curation, I look at it as a kind of a practice in mindfulness. You are very consciously aware of what you're watching and what you're presenting, giving a context to works of art that already exist. And that's what, simply put, that's what I see curation as, that, just analyzing, understanding, and contextualizing films with respect to what is happening in the world around.
Interesting. I recently did one Audio Gyan with Ram Rahman, and even he started off with the same concept, saying that I contextualize things. So I think now I can safely say that I have some definitions which are clearly pointing towards the same thing. Yeah. And also curation does it have a negative connotation, and that's why you avoid? I'll tell you why, because my understanding is also that when there is a garden, there's a gardener. So he or she decides what's in, what's out, what's a weed, what's a flower, and it's much more organized. But when you look at a forest or jungle, things are going on its own. So that's, yeah. Is that the reason why you think curation is more,
in a very literal sense, I love a jungle as much as I love a very neatly manicured garden. Mm-hmm. So, of course, that's not what you literally meant. Mm-hmm. See, I feel it's a lot to do with, how with time certain meanings and values get attached to a word. More to do with that. It also puts me probably, I feel, or maybe it's just personal, that I feel that when I call myself a curator, it puts me in a position where I am sort of superior to the work of art itself, and as if I am an authority to say that this works and this does not work, while that's exactly the job that I do, that this works for us and this does not work. I would not want to be, if something works and, you know, if it's a great film that we happen to get, and, you know, I don't want to be the person who's saying, like, look, I found it, like, you know, be the Columbus there, says, I discovered this talent or I discovered this film. I don't want, I don't like being in that spotlight of saying that I discovered so and so.
Yeah, I got it, what you're saying. And also, that's the very reason for this Audiogyan, is to understand, yes, to a certain degree, it's subjective, but being a brand, there are guidelines, so it automatically becomes objective. And that's what I have come up with few questions around. So, like, to start with, who are these people who are watching the cinema showcased on Mubi? So, if you can start by, like, do you have, like, a sort of a persona, a demographic of the audience? And, I mean, if you're supposed to reveal or anything of that sort. I mean, just a vague, like, a broad outline is good enough.
You know, broadest outline is that people watching films on Mubi are film lovers. And while one would imagine a certain kind of demographic to be a Mubi audience, that, you know, maybe a very urban art enthusiast kind of audience, or, you know, maybe film students and people who are already interested in a certain kind of cinema would be Mubi audience. But at the same time, we are often surprised by appreciation emails or notes that we get from people from across all demographics and parts of the country. So it's really hard for me to say that, you know, what is a Mubi audience, but definitely somebody, you know, anybody who's a film lover and is seeking something new, a curious mind, I would say those are the people who are sort of engaging with Mubi. Just a small anecdotal thing that I can't tell you which film or something, but there were some experimental films playing on Mubi, and somebody who works at a bank in Kerala, a bank manager from Kerala, reached out to the filmmaker and with a lovely long email of appreciation over the films that he saw on Mubi. And the filmmaker told me about it, and I was surprised and also not surprised, but just to give you an example of how wide-ranging the demographic can be.
Yeah, interesting. And then how does curation work, Madhav? The reason why I'm asking is if there are any tangible and intangible. I mean, intangible is very, like, that's the subjective part, but I'm sure there must be some parameters on which a movie is picked. So can you share any insights there?
It's hard for, it's sometimes it's easier to say what's not a fit for us. Extremely mainstream cinema is probably not a fit for us, but then we also have a policy of sort of never saying no. Again, contextualization comes to, for all you know, some very mainstream film which is absolutely not a, you know, not something that would go to festivals or anything, we might be doing a specialized focus on or certain theme-based thing where that would be a fit. So it's a lot of what is presented on Mubi is based on, you know, what themes we are going with. Is there any particular focus or any filmmaker or any other talent that we are focusing on and trying to showcase their work? I said that, you know, we're largely working it. Of course, there is a never say no policy at one level, but most of our selections are based on what we're looking for at that particular moment in terms of, you know, themes or focus or any particular filmmaker that we want to focus on at that time.
Okay. I'll probe you further on this because, I had made a rule that I'll not listen to any music which has more than 4 instruments, right? And it automatically filters certain noisy songs. Similarly, There must be some like a strong curation process when films are coming to Mami. Similarly, Mubi, there are two parts, right? One is because it's online, you want to have like a big catalog, but you also want to maintain a certain quality of content.
Yeah.
And that's where this question is coming from. Ki, are there any, what about tangible?
See, one is one very basic tangible thing which festivals would also follow. You know, when filmmakers submit films to any festival globally, what is your sound like? What are your frames like? What is your, how does your film look just on technical grounds, you know? When I play your film, your opening shot, first 10 minutes of the film, how have you started, where have you started, you know? So just those basic technical things, your sound, your frames, your lighting, those things make a difference. Obviously make count and make an impression. Some films could be very raw and, you know, lacking in one or more of these departments. And yet, when you watch the whole film, you're surprised by it because, you know, the director has pushed the envelope in some way or, you know, has created something interesting despite these technical lacks in the work. So when we watch a film, those things are always there in our mind that, you know, it's like when anybody watches your film, it's like making a first impression.
So do you think like a newbie who's a film enthusiast who has seen films has probably done like a small course on cinema appreciation, be like a judge for, I mean, I want to understand like how does your experience come into play while picking these films?
See, you know, when you've seen, worked a lot in this space and you've seen a lot of films over the years, not just from India but from everywhere, you inherently build an ability to compare. And to sort of, you know, you need that knowledge of social histories or, you know, the history of the region, of the country, or why a film in certain language, even though if it is a weaker film, why is it important? So those kind of things you understand only with experience, that you know, you would know that, you know, a film from X region, films from X region are very uncommon, and therefore you should pay more attention to whoever is, whatever film, you know, you get from that region. So certain kinds of things, the ability to compare, the ability to contextualize, to say that, okay, you know, this work from this Indian filmmaker is similar to something that was done in Korea probably 10 years ago, or something, you know, something else that was already done, or which, so those kind of understandings of nuances can only be learned with time.
Correct, absolutely. And this is about the supply side. Like, is there any parameter from the demand side? I mean, how do you guess like the bigger unknown that the audience will like this, audience will find a connect with the film? Are there any nuances there?
That's like a two-way thing, you know. One part of our job is to be a taste maker in that sense, that, you know, give people a little bit of thing that they maybe not, you feel that they might like, they might not have seen something like that before. So you create an audience as you keep doing this job, you know. You sort of give people something new to watch, and to be honest, I feel there's an audience for everything.
Correct.
And we never hesitate in showing something on the platform. If we feel it's a good film that should be out there for people to see, we never hesitate, thinking in mind that, oh, not many people would like this. We, like, even if there are four people who are going to like that film, let's play it. To be honest, we never think like this. Actually, we never think there are four people are going to like that film. In our heads, a lot of people are going to watch it and appreciate it, or at least, you know, be curious and find something different when they watch it.
Correct, correct. Yeah. Because being a designer also, there are two ways, right? One is you design for yourself. Like if you are the audience, if you are the user, you design. And then sometimes you go for a user research and then find out the pain points of a potential user and then solve for them. So yeah, it's a tricky thing, which even I'm trying to figure out.
Though we do try to keep a balance, like every month in our monthly calendar, we do try to keep a balance in terms of, you know, not like load people with just heavy, intense. And, you know, there are some films which are simple narratives and relatively easier watch kind of films, which would balance the other films which are playing in the same month.
In fact, I was going to come to that part later, but like, I don't know how many of the listeners know, but we used to run a small show called as Movie Mala.
Okay.
And we used to book an auditorium in Nehru Planetarium, the 90-seater smaller auditorium. And we used to release short films every Saturday. We did for about 13, 14 Saturdays, like got a good response. But I mean, we started asking people to come like 10 rupees, 15 rupees and come and have a seat, and nobody came. So yeah, it just got shelved. But the reason why I told you.
Was this? When were you doing this?
This was, I believe, 2007, 2008, 2009. Oh, yeah, around that time.
Okay.
And the idea was, like, we used to, like, matlab hum, like, bahut bachche the tabhi, so we used to think of, we'll start a Saturday box office, which only for short films would be there. Mm-hmm. And at that time, we used to mix up these, like, 4 to 5 really different sort of movie and then one mainstream. So you put in, like, Anand Gandhi's Right Here, Right Now with, like, two average movies. So what's your definition of like experimental cinema? And the reason why I'm asking is because I saw like Kamal Swaroop's Om Dar Badar or Amit Datta's The Museum of Imagination, and these, I don't know, they look like painting. You don't need to really understand, but it's just a visual treat and like nice experience to watch it. But is there any formal definition of experimental cinema? I mean, how much one can go abstract and still be called a cinema?
See, that's a heavy question. Many questions in one.
Uh-huh.
I mean, to be honest, I'll start with the one you asked the last, that how abstract can one go and still call it experimental cinema? It's extremely subjective.
Yeah.
We do receive a lot of submissions where probably someone thought that they were making experimental cinema, but it actually amounts to not much. Because even in these films where we are just experiencing and we think we're just watching, there is meaning, but maybe not literal. What is experimental cinema? I mean, obviously, I'm sure a lot of film sites and film books have definitions, their own definitions for it. I would personally say it's anything that that is unconventional, that goes beyond the narrative format of filmmaking and plays with space and time. And I think the experiment comes from the Latin word experimentum, which is to experience, to attempt. So just to take an idea from there, the cinema would be something that you experience, feel. Experimental cinema would, to me, treat cinema more like a temporal medium than, you know, other forms of cinema. And it's more playful. It's sort of anarchist in its own way, rebellious, and plays with the elements of this very new art form as compared to other art forms that exist in the world. Cinema is a relatively much newer art form. So experimental is what sort of plays with the different elements that form this art form. And the extent to which people can be playful, there is no extent to it. But having said that, it's hard to put a finger to on that, why certain things are working, but why they're not working. But if you look at some great experimental works, you see that there is a sort of wholesomeness in the kind of visual, sound, small moments that the whole film is creating. It's a bit like you can compare it to Russian dolls, like one thing within the other, within the other, within the other. Mm. And each individual is a doll in itself. And the whole thing, if you put them all inside one, that's also a doll. So, yeah, I hope I'm just rambling. Am I just rambling or did you get something?
No. I'm trying to understand. And I understand this question is very, very, I mean, this itself is like a, I don't know, endless discussion that what is cinema, what is experimental cinema. And yeah, you truly said it's just 100, maybe 120 years old medium. So compared to that, it's yeah, experimental. We are actually, yeah, it's experimenting only. But the reason why I was trying to understand is that, understand this is because with recent time, there has been a wave of censorship, not censoring certain things, cinema being like a freedom of expression as well. So how does those dynamics work in MUBI while curation?
See, I mean, as of now, I please correct me if I'm wrong. I believe there is still no censorship laws for OTT platforms as of yet.
Yeah.
It's touch wood. Please exclude this if you feel this can lead to, cause some trouble for all of us. But since there are none, so thankfully we don't have to worry about that as aspect so much. But for general exhibition of films at festivals and theatrical releases, it's censorship is essentially an unfair practice. It's not what a filmmaker intended to present to the audience, and to say that remove this and or add that or just add these gigantic advisories that smoking is injurious to health before you show your film to people is cruel and brutal, essentially. Films can come with, also I sometimes feel that, that's one aspect of it. And I do realize that a small part of it, which I also believe is true, is that we are a very huge country with very diverse economic classes, education levels, literacy levels, understanding in general. The whole world has progressed in a way in a certain direction, and the infrastructural progress, information technology wise, education wise, the whole world is progressing rapidly, but an individual's ability to catch up with that is probably not increasing at the same speed. So, and this, if I say this for somebody who's an educated person living in an urban scenario, so you can imagine somebody who's not as educated, not living in an urban scenario, their ability to catch up with the changes of the world is definitely probably a little lesser. Mm. So keeping in mind these disparities that exist in the country, I understand that, and cinema is a very powerful medium because it engages your sense of sight, sense of sound, hearing, sense of hearing, sense of sight, and you're also the thinking, and so probably people catch wrong kind of messaging in a certain scenario. I by no means think that films should be censored, but some way of educating audiences or creating some other kind of advisory that is also necessary, maybe. Having said that, if there is only one choice that we have, then there should always be no censorship, because that's not how artworks have to be presented, you know. When we allow censorship, then it also allows random moral uprightness will come into picture, and control will come into picture in ways that we wouldn't like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's also a touchy question which I asked, but and like, I've been a consumer of both the formats of content, like, so slow films which are on movie, like Uttaran, or and I won't name the other OTT platform, but like, say, Departed or something else. So movie being like a classic seems a bit slow at sometimes, right? So if you look at Godad or Money Call, it's not really, I mean, like, when you start watching, you have to build the taste for it. So I wanted to understand, what's the typical conversation which happens in the room, in your conference room, that how should this go in, this should be out, or this won't fit our criteria, especially with these classic films?
I think in our, all of us are of the thought that everybody in the team would be super excited. It's slow, it's experimental, it's Godard, Money Call, we're all super excited, we want these films. So, and to say that, you know, these are the films we love and we want to share with people, and we want to spotlight, and we want more people to see these films. So it's never been a question of that, you know, how we convince ourselves. And you know, just to say, for example, a Money Call film, how did I see it? Because some people saw it when he made it, and then they probably spread the word and some more people saw it. So if the knowledge about that film has survived to date, and so which means there is a growing audience, you know, I got to a point where I saw that film. So obviously there are more people out there in the world who would like to see it and enjoy it.
And then you're not really, I wouldn't say concerned, but not really worried about. So do you do extra effort to educate a potential viewer about why you should watch a film through Spotlight and other mediums? Because otherwise it's very tough, right? After 15 minutes, you gently drop off if you don't know who Money Call is or who...
So all films on Mubi come with something called our take, which is what we, the programmers on Mubi, write ourselves. So that's what the our take means, that every programmer says that this is what is interesting about this film and this is why you should watch it. You can call it like a small two-line pitch that we make for the film. So, and that's what you see for each film on the homepage and not the synopsis. You go on the film page and then you see the synopsis and other such information, maybe the trailer or anything. So, that our take is what is from our end, a little note to our audience that this is what you should see. There is, of course, Notebook Movie, which extensively covers cinema and, you know, filmmakers that are being presented on the platform, where our audiences can go and read more and, you know, find out more. Then at the same time, for each film page that we have on Mubi, our audiences interact in the sense they leave comments, they rate the films, and that sort of also gives, I'm guessing, gives, you know, the viewers an idea of what kind of film what kind of film it would be.
Interesting. Yeah, I think I've done with most of the questions. I have last two sort of cliche questions, like what's the long-term future of Mubi, independent cinema, parallel cinema, experimental cinema? How do you envision it? Like, just based on what you have seen so far.
Long-term future of Mobi in India would be to find and present find more and more films and filmmakers from all diverse regions and languages of this country and present cinema, experimental cinema that's been made over the years, the films, independent films that are being made currently. That's just to spotlight the rich diversity of this country would be one of the long-term sort of focuses of Mubi in India. And to speak of the future of independent and parallel cinema, I don't know how frankly I should talk about this. Currently, the way things are going in our country, I don't know what should we should just be talking about the future of cinema in general, probably. I think if things are also general, certain things are like laws of nature. It's like, high tide, low tide, and independent and parallel cinema has survived and will continue to survive. And especially now, with the world going increasingly digital, of course, it's made the outreach to audience easier. It's become a little more balanced and fair in terms of, the kind of attention very popular films gets versus, it's become more fair and balanced in terms of, everybody is eventually going to use social media and those platforms to push the word for their films. It's obviously in an ideal world scenario, given if there is no economic slowdown and no other problems, other outwardly problems in the world, the future of independent and parallel cinema is more promising. Than before. The only, the few things that could probably be really beneficial for it would be like how a lot of parallel cinema was encouraged by NFDC back in the day when it used to be Film Finance Forum, I think, and. A lot of Shyam Benegal, Saeed Mirza, Gautam Ghosh. All their films are, and many other filmmakers, their films are were produced by NFDC. Even on many Money Call films, they were produced by NFDC. So that's what is really needed. That kind of state support is really needed to, nurture filmmakers and produce films which sort of become a part of our cinematic sort of legacy.
Correct. And is there any from the entries you get and from the catalog which you already have, is there any pattern or within India that Odia films are quite interesting which were never explored before, or say films from Tamil Nadu, or is there any, or Kashmiri films, is there something to look after?
Not films from Northeast, actually.
Okay.
All kinds of, Odia films also, have, it's not like they've been explored a lot, but slightly more than Northeast. Of course, all the film industries in the South are very solid and, thriving industries. There is a lot to explore there also, but I personally find it very interesting to see films from the Northeast. We were able to present some months back two films. One was in a dialect called Pangchengpa, and one was in a dialect called Mishing. Those are the kind of things which are really, interesting. And they are rooted in local folklore and local literature. And they tell you about that region. They obviously, there is a narrative side to it, but you also learn, discover so much about a part which is barely covered or understood, you know, generally in cinema or any other media for that matter.
And obviously cinema becomes like a very powerful medium, as you said, to understand the local culture from where things are. And one last classic cliche question, like which movie one should watch this weekend? I won't say, I wouldn't put you in trouble, like give me top three movies, but this weekend, which like to mainly get a flavor of movies, content curation and the sort of catalog that you guys have. Like there's no stress this weekend, can you bata do, so it's fine.
From what's on our now playing right now on Movie India, I think watch The Museum of Imagination.
Okay. Amit Datta.
And enjoy, and then go watch all his films.
Cool. I think this is a one small thing which I wanted to add, being a designer and also like a critique of nuance thing, is that one small protocol which we used to follow while showing movies in Movie Mala is that even after the movie is over, please don't get up and just walk out of the theater. Just make a habit to watch the entire, not the entire, but at least 50 to 60% of the credit score. And I think you guys are doing like a fantastic job with that, especially with some OTTs just dying to throw the next film at you.
I always go and pause. I'm like, no, I want to read the credits.
Correct. It's a great practice to build and to be sensitive to all the hard work that goes in the film. All right. Svetlana, it was really wonderful talking to you, and thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much. Lovely speaking to you.
Same here. And I'll again have a plug. So those listeners who want to watch films for 1 month free can go to mubi.com/audiogan and enjoy the film. Watch The Museum of Imagination.
Great.
Cool. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And that's it from today's Gyan session. Catch us on iTunes, Saavn, Stitcher or any podcasting app you use. Do rate us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Stay tuned for more Gyan on audiogyan.com. Till then, bye.